Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this last day of September, the 30th of September. I don't know if you saw The Way We Live Now in the New York Times Magazine section on Sunday. Interesting article on the college calculation. How much does higher education matter? The author says that colleges do so little to measure what students learn between freshman and senior years. How much does a college education, the actual teaching and learning that happens on campus, really matter? A recession makes such doubt all the more salient. Last month, NPR ran a segment which is called, Is a College Education Worth the Debt? An economist noted that 12% of mail carriers have college degrees, and 2020 did a piece saying you could take the pool of college-bound students and lock them in a closet for 4 years, and thanks to their smarts and work ethic, they would still out-earn people who never went to college. Joining us this hour to talk about the value of a college education, the debt that comes for many students due to their college education, and what students see on the other side of graduation, which is not always a happy scene for a lot of graduates. Our guest this hour is Mike McPherson. He is president of the Spencer Foundation. Prior to joining the foundation in 2003, he was president of McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota for 7 years. He is a nationally known economist. His expertise focuses on the interplay between education and economics. He spent 22 years prior to the McAllister presidency as a professor of economics and chair of the economics department, dean of faculty at Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts. He's the author of several books, including College Access, Opportunity or Privilege, Keeping College Affordable, and Economic Analysis and Moral Philosophy. We'll be welcoming phone calls from Mike, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, you are ever so welcome to do that, as always. That's talk@wpr.org. Professor Mike McPherson, thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be with you.
So what did you make of the article? Did it make you think that indeed students need to go to college in order to make a living in this world?
Well, I don't know about in order to make a living, but, you know, I certainly agree with the article's point that for most people, going to college improves your chances of having a good life.
Mm-hmm. Of being able to make, I guess the figures are still rather true, that if you graduate from college, your expected income is almost double if you don't finish high school.
I'm sure that's right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Even if you do finish high school, you get a substantial earnings advantage over the long run from going to college.
Mm-hmm. What is it that is worrying, and I guess substantially, so I know a number of people who have graduated from college and are just finding it very, very difficult to find jobs right now. Is there a concern among college students what's on the other side of graduation?
Well, sure. I mean, everybody's concerned about the future of the economy. The fact is, though, that the unemployment rate among college goers is quite a lot lower than the unemployment rate among people who didn't go to college. You know, you can hear everybody's going to have a friend who, you know, has a college degree and is driving a cab, or you can find some mail carriers who have college degrees. But the fact is that if you look at jobs that require high levels of skill, they're mostly occupied by college graduates. And if you look at jobs that are dead ends, they're mostly occupied by people who didn't go to college. So you can't just take individual stories. You really have to look at, you know, what are the odds.
And are there certain skills that are more valuable than others in this economy?
Well, you know, I think when you're thinking about college plans, you need to take a pretty long time horizon view. You're not really thinking just about lining up that first job when you graduate. You're thinking about a career that, you know, if you're fresh out of high school, is going to last 35 or 40 years. And the jobs that are going to be valuable in 20 years are going to be different from the ones that are valuable right now. But it's very, very likely that future jobs are going to require even more education, typically, than present jobs. That's been true for the last 100 years and more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no sign it's going to change.
That is interesting. We probably have little idea of what the jobs will be. But think of all what that's happened in the world of computers, which we didn't do anything with some 20 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And, you know, everything about the way our economy works these days is, I mean, it's become so much a knowledge economy that it just seems really clear that people are going to benefit by having what economists call more human capital.
I was interested in this statement in the article that nationwide, half of all students who start college don't end up with a four-year degree. So it is really a mark of discipline, which may bode well for you in whatever your employment is, that you finished what you started, and you will probably do so in the future.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right. You know, I recently published a book with two colleagues, Bill Bowen and Matt Chingos, in which we looked at factors that predict who's likely to graduate from college. We studied why it is that some groups of students seem to do better than others and so on. One of the things that comes through is, you know, doing well in high school is an excellent predictor of how likely you are to graduate from college. And I think part of it is those same factors of you know, self-discipline and sticking to a commitment. I mean, that's what enables you to get a high grade point average in high school. And it turns out that that actually works better than test scores in identifying who's likely to graduate from college.
And so schools are looking at that more seriously, at the grade point, the work done in high school?
We'd like them to do that. You know, there is, a tendency to worry that the grading standards may vary so much from one high school to another that you can't really rely on them. But, in fact, that doesn't appear to be true. Even if you ignore the differences across high schools, it still turns out that racking up a good GPA is an indication of somebody who is focused and effective.
Mm-hmm. And what about some students don't do very well in high school. Is that an indication that I'm wondering what the percentage is that they probably will not make it in college? Or can you change your life in college?
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody is doomed by what their high school performance was. And, of course, there are stories of late bloomers. And I think one of the things that colleges need to get better at is figuring out how to address student deficiencies when they arrive at college effectively and efficiently so that they are able to move forward. The Gates Foundation is actually trying to get some work going on how to do remediation more effectively.
Mm-hmm. And what are those deficiencies usually? Are they in math? Are they in reading comprehension?
You know, I think the evidence is that if students have a particular focus limitation, you know, if they didn't do the math that they needed to do in high school or if they have writing problems, that can be addressed. The students who really are up against the wall are ones who show up with across-the-board weaknesses. If you have to take several remedial classes in different areas, I mean, first, that's really discouraging because you thought you were going to college, but it turns out you're actually redoing high school, and it's going to take you longer to finish. But also, it's just when the weaknesses are across the board, it's just a lot for people to overcome. The big lesson here is address it when you're in high school, right? I mean, don't let that happen to you. But if you have let it happen to you, then it's a long road.
Right. What about the money picture here? If indeed there were an extension of Pell Grants to students who need money, would a lot of those students stay in school? Or are we looking at a number of students dropping out of college, not for want of a college degree or for their hard effort, but simply because they don't have the money?
Money is a real issue. There's just no question. In this book that we recently wrote, we found it very striking that even after you control for all the differences between low-income families and upper-income families, you know, students from low-income families tend to have lower grade point averages in high school. They don't do as well in tests. There are lots of reasons why, you know, they've lived deprived lives. But even after you control for all of that, family income still is a significant factor explaining differences in graduation rates. Part of that is that the way we provide financial help for people in college is so complicated that people often, we think, miss out on opportunities that are out there. But the other part of it is that it's really clear from our studies that if colleges could focus more of their financial help on people who really need it and less of it on things like merit scholarships for people who could actually afford to go without the help.
Oh, that's interesting.
That would improve graduation rates.
How do people keep from missing out on opportunities?
Well, as individuals, you really need to find a way to get good advice. And ideally, you can get good advice from the counselors in your high school. What we would like to see at a system level is just a simpler system to start with. You know, the Pell Grant, which is the baseline of funding for college students in the United States, has a very intimidating form that you have to complete. And you don't really know, you know, you can't know when you're a sophomore in high school what your Pell Grant's going to be if you are successful and you start college. So these kinds of complexities in the federal system just make it confusing and difficult, and it puts a lot of pressure on counselors who have a great many other responsibilities in high schools to help people find their way through it. So we'd like to see the system itself simpler. But then for the individual young person or adult who is thinking about going back to college, the best thing they can do if they can't get enough help from, you know, high school counselors and the like, is to get in touch with a good, respected college in the area and talk to a financial aid officer. Even if it's not a college they want to go to, people at a good place will make time for you, and they'll help you learn about your options.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the average debt is now, Professor McPherson, of the college graduate?
Well, there are about one-third of college graduates graduate from college with no educational debt at all. About among the two-thirds who do have debt, it's pushing up toward about $25,000.
That's a lot of money.
Well, it is a lot of money, but it's also a lifetime investment. The people that I worry about and others worry about are the small fraction, really only about 10%, who rack up $40,000 or more in debt going through college. That's a real problem, and we need to find ways to make sure that doesn't happen.
We're going to take phone calls for our guest, and we'll take them in just one moment. He is president of the Spencer Foundation, former president of McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota, a nationally known economist whose expertise is on the interplay between education and economics. We're talking about higher education, and our reference is an article in the New York Times this past Sunday, The College Calculation, How Much Does Higher Education Matter? Are there certain courses that are make you more likely to make a good salary? Is that really important? And we have still determined that if you have a bachelor's degree, what are the figures here? The median earnings of full-time workers was nearly $47,000 in 2007. No degree, this is for someone who attended, that was for graduation, for somebody who attended college but did not get a degree, $33,000, and a high school graduate, $27,000. So we're looking at college and whether or not it matters, and those figures show that indeed it does. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. We have a couple lines open for you right now, and we'll take them momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a few things I want to pass along. As you know, every 700 donations makes our October pledge drive one day shorter. And another day off is just 369 pledges away. We already have one day off, so this is good news. Our total pledge is 1,031. We have one day off. If you want another day off, go to WPR.org and make your pledge early. That's good news, huh? Let's go to phone calls now and start with Rick from Iowa. Where are you in Iowa, Rick?
Elkader.
Oh, okay. Hello, Rick.
Yeah, I got a comment. My niece just graduated from a private college in Dubuque. It's called Dubuque University.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got like $60K of debt.
Ooh.
And she can't find a job. And I think a person's almost better off going into a trade where they can make 30, 40 grand after only 2 years of a tech school or a trade school, because she's going to be carrying that debt, and she's only 22 years old. Think about that.
What's she trained in?
Well, she went into graphic arts, you know, like with computers, and hell, they're offshoring that stuff to India now, and so and the best job she'll get is maybe 25 grand a year, and that's hardly going to service that debt.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, she'd have been better off going into a trade, and she might have got the same kind of job anyway. You know, going to a tech school.
Mm-hmm. Mike.
Well, I mean, I agree that she's in real trouble, and the last thing that we talked about before the break was this 10% of students who borrow $40,000 or more. You know, there are other college options where you don't have to borrow nearly that much money. You can go to a public college, public university, and if you go in-state, it's always a lot less expensive than that. Nobody should borrow $60,000 for undergraduate education and expect to come out of it ahead. And people need to know that going in. If you want to be a graphic artist and you think you have to borrow $60,000 to do it, make a different plan. But you don't have to give up on college in order to avoid borrowing that kind of money. You just have to look at alternatives that are not so expensive.
What about his point concerning trade schools? When you're making a decision as to whether or not you should do college or go to a trade school, what should you be looking at? When are trade schools the answer?
Well, I think for a lot of young people, trade schools are the answer. You know, one thing I learned in many years as a college teacher is there are some people who just don't really like to go to school in a traditional academic way, and they would like to go someplace and learn how to do something practical. They don't need to take English literature to do that. And there are many alternatives out there that make those things possible. You know, for me, when I talk about people going to college, I'm really thinking about, broadly, post-secondary training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think in the economy that seems to lie ahead that just coming straight out of college, out of high school with a degree and getting the first job you can get is a good strategy for building your life. For most people, there are always exceptions. For many people, they need to think seriously about whether they want to slug it out for 4 years or 5 or 6 years is more common to get a bachelor's degree, or whether they can meet their career goals and fit their skills, their preferences with a trade school, a technical school, community college certificate program, community college, associate's degree. There are a lot of options out there. A big thing is people really need to get good advice before they make these choices.
Oh, that's a great thing to say. How true. And where do you get that great advice?
Well, we have to do better at this. I mean, partly, again, it's that we present people with such a complicated system. The kind of default source, if you don't have anything else for getting advice, is your high school guidance counselor. In the United States, typically a high school guidance counselor has 400 or 500 students to work with. They have a lot of things on their plates besides helping kids find their way to post-secondary alternatives. And they don't have time, and we don't do a good job of updating them on what the options are. The web has, you know, unfortunately, both a lot of information and a lot of misinformation. You know, you cannot tell by looking at a website whether you're looking at a really serious college or whether you're looking at a place that will invite you in to get $60,000 in debt for a degree that's not going to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, objective, honest information is something we just really have to find ways to provide.
Let's go next. Thanks very much, Rick, for your call. Mohammed is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mohammed.
Hey, how you doing, Kathy?
All right, how are you?
I'd like to ask a question. When I was going through college, I have a PhD. It was about seven of us that went through a PhD program in different areas of education. Some were in ed psych, others were in ed leadership, and so on and so forth. We all finished, all minorities. And for two or three years, none of us could get jobs in the area that we had trained in. And I'm presently having my dissertation published as a book and working on a second book. Why is that so? And it's really discouraging because they say, I have a professor who was basically, he was world-renowned in his area, and he actually told me, he said, I don't understand it, but why you don't have a position now.
What kind of position do you want, Mohammed?
Well, I'd like to work at either a college, a small college, large college, or a university.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I have applied, but it hasn't come through.
How long have you been waiting?
Let's see, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mohammed, I guess I want to say commiserations on how things worked out, but also congratulations on your academic success. What field are you in?
It's in curriculum and instruction, but I did a research on urban schools, outstanding African-American teachers and outstanding European-American teachers, and how did they or the students impacted them.
And may I ask where you got your degree from?
UW, Milwaukee.
Wow. So you went to a good place. You have a perfectly reasonable record.
Yes.
So I don't have a good answer for you. I would say right now, you know, as we all know, the economy generally has been hammered, and school funding and university funding is in a very difficult spot, especially public universities.
Yes.
So there aren't a lot of jobs to be had right now. You know, it's terrible that I can only tell you to hang in and wait. You know, without knowing a ton more about your personal situation, I couldn't really offer, you know, specific advice to you. But it's a tough spot to be in.
The other thing that I don't have any debt, I actually worked most of the time as I went through school, and I came out with debt-free.
Oh, good for you.
Good for you.
I just wanted to give that as an encouraging word for some of the young people out there, maybe younger than I am, that would that are navigating the course of higher education. You can't do it without being anchored down with debt at the end.
Yeah, it takes a lot of discipline to do that. I admire you for. I'm sure it took a lot to make that happen.
Yeah. It's just too bad that he works when he's going through school to get through school. He gets through school and he can't find the job, although he could find the job to get him through school. It's rather ironic.
Well,
isn't it?
I mean, I don't know that Muhammad said he couldn't find a job at all. He couldn't find
a
job to use his PhD skills.
Right.
Which is bad enough. I don't mean to minimize that, but
yeah.
Not the same as not having a job, period.
You know, again, it's a case because it is such a hard system to maneuver. When you talked earlier about the fact that we need great advice, be going to college or if you're graduating, you need great advice all along the way, don't you? Mohammed needs great advice from somebody on how
right.
to get into a school to teach his profession.
I think it sounds like he has people in his corner at UWM. In his case, I suspect that hanging in through the tough times for the economy, things may very well turn out okay for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think your larger point is right. In fact, I would say, you know, the information problems really start much earlier. If you think about the parents of a young person in seventh grade, when they start high school, they're going to be making choices that are going to have a big effect on their future. Are they going to take a college prep curriculum? Are they going to work hard in high school? The more parents knew about what the options are and about how much difference it would make what choices their children made, the better job they could do as parents.
Right.
So it's not just at the end of high school that people should start thinking about this.
Here's an email that's come in. I've long felt that colleges as money-making businesses promote a social panic. There seems to be a stigma of being somewhat less a person if you don't get that diploma. Can you speak to this?
Well, of course, colleges do try to encourage people to go. If you have a strong record in high school and high, you know, ACT or SAT scores, you're going to have to get a separate room in your house to put all the mail you're going to get from colleges. So they certainly campaign to recruit students, and they want to get the best students that they can. You know, personally, I do think, I mean, I think for most people, going to post-secondary training in one form or another makes sense. That said, I do think it's unfortunate in our society that getting into the right college for a certain segment of our society is very much a status game, and that you know, people who do good work that is not work that's grounded in high many years in school sometimes don't get respected in the way that they should. So I'm sympathetic with that kind of social point. But all that said, you know, for most people, a high school degree is not going to equip them well for what they're going to need for the rest of their lives.
Thank you, Mohammed, for your call. We go next to Rose from Eau Claire. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for having this program.
You're welcome.
I do have to say, I could talk forever on this subject. I've got a lot of kids, and I also do taxes, and I see it from my client's point of view. A point that your guest touched on was schools on the web. I have seen people who have been, I can only say, suckered into going back to places like Cordon Bleu to take courses that cost anywhere from $50,000 to $60,000 that is never going to give them a job that they can realize the kind of money they need to pay back this debt. And I feel that out there somewhere there is a class action suit begging to be taken, because I've seen clients who are in their 50s being offered loans and creative financing to take these courses, and it's truly criminal. It's saddening in the extreme. Anyway, I have, my own case is I have children who have gone to Madison, and I find that no matter how much you prepare, you cannot know what's going to come up. And the schools always do not figure medical costs, medical coverage into the students' packages. And very often, students will get ill. And even if they have medical coverage, they will end up with medical bills that can substantially add to their debt load.
Mike?
Yeah, so let me start with your second point about financial adversity that occurs while you're in college. Medical problems, either of the family or of the student, are a good example of that. But it's also true that a parent might lose her job or his job. You know, somebody who's relying on their car to go to school may have a car problem that they can't afford to fix. This is one of the reasons why families that are well off are much more likely to have their kids graduate from college on time, and much more likely simply to have them graduate, because they can absorb these kinds of blows without the setback having to translate into somebody dropping out of college. A couple things on that. It's very important to get in and talk to the people in financial aid at the university that the student is attending, because in many, many cases, they will make adjustments if there's a big change in the family circumstances, and they certainly should do that. We also think, and in this, the book Crossing the Finish Line that we recently published, we make a point of the fact that it's good if universities have some discretionary funds that they can use with judgment in circumstances like that. For good reasons, most financial aid is formula-driven. But it is also good to supplement that with money that on an emergency basis can be given to help somebody get through a difficult spot. That doesn't mean that the university should be prepared to pay $100,000 in medical bills. I mean, for that, we have to fix the health care problems, and I'm sure that's a an issue that arises on your show from time to time.
Sure. Oh, really?
But
many times.
Coming back to this issue of people going, you know, being seduced by bad choices that are offered by colleges. I have no idea whether there's a legal issue there or not. That's certainly not my expertise. On the one hand, I think that's absolutely right, and people just need to think about what alternatives do they have. Again, you don't have to go to a private or for-profit cooking school to get training in being a cook. You can do that at a great many community colleges at very dramatically lower prices, and you really need to take a look at those alternatives. The other thing that worries me, though, is these genuine scare stories that are out there scare some people away from going to college at all, because you say that every college is the way these colleges are, and that's just not true. You know, I mean, any sensationalist news broadcaster, you know, John Stossel in 2020, can go and find five people who were done in by unscrupulous colleges. But that doesn't mean that every college is unscrupulous, because I can go and find five people who had great experience
sure.
in college. So we need to pay attention to the probabilities, and we need to make good choices in advance about the deal that's being offered to us. It's hard, and you need advice, but I think that's the way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. And thanks so much for your call, Rose. We go next to Penny from La Crosse. Hi, Penny.
Yes, I have a question about my daughter. I have a married daughter with two children, lives in the Twin Cities. She has a BA in history from the University of Minnesota, and she wants to go back to school to be a nurse. But what financial opportunities are out there for her and her family? She doesn't, you know, they don't have really that kind of money right now so that she could go back and do this without some financial aid that would be, you know, not too costly for them.
So so your daughter would fall into the category of what's called independent students. She also is looking at education beyond the bachelor's degree. So Pell Grants are not available to students after they've are not available for graduate training. There are options out there, mostly loans, that can help people go back to school for graduate training. And if she were to go visit the University of Minnesota's financial aid people, or go see the people in the excellent nursing school that they have there. My daughter-in-law is a product of that.
Oh, really?
School.
Huh.
They could review the options with her. But there are these federally provided loans called Grad Plus loans, which offer much better interest rates than the kind of private loans that our previous caller was talking about. And you can borrow those up to the cost of attendance. You have to think hard about whether the payoff from that is going to be sufficient to cover the cost of the debt. But you can pay off over a period of time. And some graduate programs will also have scholarships or tuition discounts available for some students. So, you know, I think there are financial aid options out there to explore. I wouldn't just assume that you have to write a check for the full amount in order to go back to school and get a nursing degree. And of course, you know, if you wanted to look for an example of a field where, as of now, it looks like the job prospects are going to be strong for a long time, nursing certainly high on that list.
It sure is. Thank you very much, Penny, for your call. I meant to ask you about this. Did you say that 6 years now to complete college education is the norm? Is it 6 years?
Well, you know, the average for public colleges and universities is above 5 years now.
Really?
This is one of the things that we focused on in Crossing the Finish Line, because
It's very costly, both to the system, you know, providing all those teachers, dorm rooms, et cetera, for an extra year, year and a half is expensive. But it's also very costly in people's lives. I mean, that's another year of your life where you're not going to be able to benefit right. from your college degree. So figuring out ways to help people graduate on time would be a very good thing to do. There are a lot of places these days that are talking about, wouldn't it be great if we had a three-year degree and think of all the money we could save? So our view is, why don't we start with a four-year degree and then see if we can work down?
That's such a change from when I went to college. It was just 4 years. Everybody graduated in 4 years.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. It's at some private colleges, the four-year norm is pretty strong. You know, perhaps partly because the prices are so much higher. But also, I think, you know, one of the things that's true is back in I guess we can call it the old days, people thought of themselves as entering with a certain class, going through college, and graduating with their class. You know, I'm the class of 1976, whatever. Now it seems to be much more scattered, and that sense of kind of a common, you know, cohort of people moving through isn't there so much. That, in part, that's just inevitable because so many people go to college now. They're very big places, particularly on the public side, and things get kind of anonymous. But if you feel like you're a part of something, not only is it more likely to help you move through on time, but it's probably more likely to keep you connected. And, you know, sure. One of the things we think is that colleges need to find ways to build peer relationships and build up a common kind of ethic that we're going through this together, we're going to graduate.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause for just a moment and we'll return. Our number is 800-486-8655. The question of the hour is, how much does education matter? And our guest is the president of the Spencer Foundation. To put it in a nutshell, what they do, what their mission is, broadly conceived, is to investigate ways in which education, broadly conceived, can be improved around the world. And our guest has been the president of the Spencer Foundation for several years, 2003. He was president of McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota for 7 years as well. He is an economist. He spent 22 years prior to the McAllister presidency as professor of economics, chair of the economics department, and dean of faculty at Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts. The author of many books, including most recently, and it may be helpful to those of you who are thinking about college, Crossing the Finish Line, also College Access, Opportunity or Privilege, Keeping College Affordable, and Economic Analysis and Moral Philosophy. More phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Neil Sheehan will be our guest the second hour of our program this morning. He has a new book. You'll recall his first book, many of you, A Bright Shining Lie, which won the National Book Award and the Pulitzer Prize for Nonfiction in 1989, which is considered by many to be the ultimate book about Vietnam. He spent a number of years in Vietnam as a war correspondent for UPI and the New York Times, and he, in 1971, obtained the Pentagon Papers, which brought the Times the Pulitzer Prize Gold Medal for Meritorious Public Service. He's the author now of A Fiery Peace in a Cold War, Bernard Shriver and the Ultimate Weapon. So Neil will be with us, hour number two. Okay, back to phone calls for Mike. We go next to Paul is next. Hi, Paul from Milwaukee.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. I'd like to make 2 points. I'm the parent of two girls who are in college, including a freshman at this small private school up in St. Paul called McAllister.
Oh, really?
so far, we're very impressed with that institution. And both of my girls graduated from Rufus King,
oh,
school I think Kathleen is familiar with.
Yes, I am.
And my point in saying that is I think to the extent parents have influence on where their kids go to high school, I think that where kids graduate from high school can play a critical role in where they go to college. It starts early. And if parents and kids can think that far ahead, kids graduating from King I think, have a lot of opportunities, especially if they do well at King, because it's well recognized, and King's not the only school. I'm just using that as an example. So start thinking early, you know, when you're middle school, where are you going to go to high school, to think about where you're going to go to college. And then once you get to college, both of my kids have to be in private schools, but each semester is a kind of what I call a negotiating game with the private schools. At the beginning of each year, we get our financial aid letter, but I view that as the beginning, not the end of the process. And I'm sure the financial aid officers hate when they hear me calling or writing, but I negotiate every year, and we always get more money for the kids than what the schools initially offer. And it's not just by asking for more money. You have to construct a case that not all the factors were considered that should go into the formula of what decides how much money you get. But the professor's point that you need to be engaged in the financial aid process, you need to know who the financial aid officers are at college, and don't just accept what you get in the mail the first time. Engage the school, talk to them, and build a case for yourself that you deserve and need more money. And most of the time, you're going to get something more. Because I think most parents don't do that. And when you do it, there are discretionary funds, as the professor said, that are available. If you make a case that you need those, oftentimes you can get those.
Well, Paul, I went to Rufus King High School. Oh.
Did you really?
I graduated in 1964.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I grew up in Milwaukee on the near north side.
Oh, my gosh.
King and Now, I think, is a magnet school or something like that, right?
It's a so-called specialty school. It's IB, International Baccalaureate, which I think helps.
I think IB is a great program. I agree with you that, you know, and I'll bet one of the things that distinguishes King, and certainly not only King, is good counseling. I would guess that the college counselors there know about the differences among schools and help guide students toward places that will be a good fit.
I think that's true to an extent, but like a lot of other schools, unfortunately, the counselors are overwhelmed with lots of other issues.
Sure.
And I think parents just need to be really engaged. It's almost as much studying for the parents as it is for the kids. You're just studying different things.
Yeah,
and that's the financial aid phase.
Excuse me, Paul. I fully agree with that. And I also think, I don't think the financial aid office is unhappy with you for calling and pursuing these questions. I'm sure the officers get unhappy with people who just call and scream. But, you know, if you make a reasoned case, and in fact, you know, Brian Lindemann, who runs the financial aid office at McAllister, is one of the leaders in his profession. They want to get these things right. And if they did miss something, they want to know about it. They're not trying to pull a fast one on you. And, you know, as long as you can sustain a dialogue that is, you know, based on evidence and that is respectful on both sides, you know, I think you're absolutely right. And you're talking about major dollars, you know, when you go to a place like McAllister College. Of course,
yes.
Loyally, I need to say that it's worth every nickel, but... you know, it's a serious amount of money for sure, and just as you would, you know, be willing to negotiate in buying a home, negotiate in buying a car, you should certainly be willing to make your case on higher education. The big thing, and this is a huge problem, is don't assume that sticker price, that tuition price that's listed on the web, is what you're going to pay. Because at a place like McAllister, probably two-thirds of the students wind up paying less than that because two-thirds of the students need financial support to afford a McAllister College.
Where does your other child go to school, Paul?
Harvard.
Oh, my.
That's a good place, too.
Harvard's been very generous. I mean, it's amazing. I'm sure we've paid less at Harvard over the 3.5 years than we would have paid at probably Wisconsin.
No kidding.
Harvard has a huge endowment, and they're willing to dip into it, at least in my experience.
You know, they have made a huge commitment. You know, it's a very good place. We often speak about it as being the McAllister of the East.
I like that, Mike. Thank you, Paul, very much for the call.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Let's go to Kathy from Green Bay. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Good morning. Just a couple comments. In high school, the counselors quite often will direct students either to college or to work or maybe a two-year school, kind of a fork in the road. And quite often when they direct students to a two-year school, like, you know, one of the, you know, excellent tech schools, Wisconsin Technical Colleges, they think of it as an end, a stopping point. And unfortunately, Wisconsin residents don't realize what a community college they have. I think in Madison and Milwaukee, you know, that's not the case. They understand that it's more of a community college. But in the other areas, gosh, it's an excellent way to find out kind of who you are, what you like to do without spending a ton of money. It's really reasonable. And Wisconsin has one of the highest rates nationally for people with associate degrees but not having gone on to bachelor's degrees. And I think that's maybe because they're not aware that they can transfer those credits to either a state school or, like I work at Concordia University, we've got adult learning centers, accelerated centers, where you can go one night a week. We take up to 80 credits, even no matter how long ago they were. I think just, unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that that can be done and that you can complete a bachelor's degree later in life. And so that was my two comments.
Yeah. Sure. They're good. Thank you.
Kathy, I think it is the fact is, and again, in this Crossing the Finish Line book, we found that among students who said that their goal was to get a bachelor's degree and who had taken an admissions test, which is, you don't need to take an admissions test typically to go to a community college, among those students, the chances that they would wind up with a bachelor's degree after 6 years were much higher if they started at a four-year college than if they started at a community college. I think there are a variety of reasons for that. And this is after we were comparing students with similar backgrounds. This wasn't a matter that the four-year students were more promising. One of them is that students may not understand the transfer for options. Another is that depending on the state you're in, the transfer options may be easier or harder to negotiate. But, you know, another thing is that in many states, not that many students get through the two-year college.
Really?
Two-year colleges nationally have a real challenge in persistence and completion of their programs. And if you don't get out of that two-year college with the right credential, you're not going to pass on into the four-year places. So
right.
I would have to say, and I don't know the Wisconsin system in detail, but on the whole, if you really want to get a bachelor's degree right after high school, your best option nationally is to start at a four-year college rather than a two-year college.
Hmm.
But many people go to two-year colleges for reasons that have nothing to do with a direct plan to get a bachelor's degree, and they do a lot of good things. They deserve support. They're important institutions. Don't mean to criticize them generally, but as if you want advice about your best strategy for attaining that bachelor's degree, I think in most states that's the right advice.
Thanks, Kathy. We have about a minute left. Mike from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. It sounds like you have a cash register mentality. If you want to change the colleges into vocational schools, I guess that's what we're going to get. Isn't life much deeper than that? And life is very short. So why the cash register thing? Why the focus on dollars, 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 dollars? It's just a piece of paper with numbers on it. For crying out loud, I think you should wake up. It's the decisions that people make inside them that count, not how much this or that they have.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the many good things that come out of college that you can't measure in dollars and cents. You know, even relatively simple things like your health status. People who go to college tend to take better care of themselves. They're healthier, but also much deeper things like, you know, appreciation for literature and the arts and, you know, the ability to contribute to the political process in the country. So I recognize with you that there are a lot of these benefits. The fact is, you're taking several years out of your life. Most people feel they'll have better lives if they have higher incomes, and I think mostly they're right. And they want advice about how to accomplish that.
And
I don't think that means that they have a cash register mentality or that I have it. It's a perfectly reasonable thing. You're going to spend $50,000 or $100,000 to understand all of the things that are going to flow from it, and part of that is jobs.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much. I had no idea you grew up in Milwaukee. That's great. We have all these connections.
I don't try to keep it a secret. I'm
good.
Very proud of it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Our guest this hour, Professor Mike McPherson. He is the president of the Spencer Foundation and was president of McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota for 7 years. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing the hour, and thanks to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have more conversation ahead following the news on the Ideas Network.